It is my pleasure to present...
Good morning and welcome to the Carmichael Dave Show, starring Carmichael Dave, Jay Mars, and your phone calls on the Fire Wings hotline at 1-800-920-1140. Text in on the Jiffy Loop text line at 44-1140. Now, strap in and sit down. Here's Carmichael Dave.
It was after the Philadelphia Atlanta game yesterday, and I was not really paying attention. I was doing something on my phone. The TV was on. I wasn't paying attention to what was on the screen. Then all of a sudden, I swear I heard Nate Diaz talking. And I look up, and it's Trae Young.
Mm-hmm.
I know this sounds crazy, but next time you see Trae Young talk, tell me if I'm crazy or not. Very similar voice and mannerisms between the two of them.
And Stockton's Trae Young, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, the 209. You know, he stocked and slapped the Sixers yesterday.
Woo, nice one.
Scott Howard Cooper's going to join us in a couple minutes, or according to our studio clock, he'll join us in 25 minutes. It says 7:39 on the studio clock.
I know, we talked about
I know we talked about it. I'm just saying it is...
I know, but you had a look on your face like, Jay, did you know that?
No. It's just incredibly...
annoying?
When you're used to... Yeah, you got to look at the computer clock. Anyways.
So dumb.
We haven't even had time, and this is where this is where it's very interesting throughout the week. We're going to, like tomorrow, still go back in time and recap some things. Because don't think we're going to let that Nets-Bucks series slide.
Yeah.
We need to talk about Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant, and this is an exaggeration, about a millimeter away from the Nets advancing.
Right.
On that three, that was a two.
The Mitch Richmond three.
We got a lot to talk about there.
Also, it's been confirmed. Monty McNair will represent the Kings tomorrow at the virtual NBA draft lottery.
When did this get confirmed?
Jason Anderson put it out yesterday, and then James Hamm just confirmed it. So.
Yeah.
So there you go. Monty's going to... We're going to really see how good of a GM Monty is tomorrow.
This is why this is funny. There's a person in the Kings organization that I will tap for news sometimes, but I don't use it that often. And during the break, I texted that person who literally, as you were telling me it's Monty McNair, was telling me it's Monty McNair. I tapped the keg for no reason whatsoever.
I'm a better source than your source.
You are a better source. Well, no, I didn't ask early enough. All right, Monty McNair. I like it. And I think this is, the last year would have been too much. In fact, actually, last year didn't Monty get hired? Did Monty get hired after the draft last year? Or after the lottery? I think he did, right?
Did he get hired after the lottery? I don't remember.
I don't either. Anyways, I'm with that, but.
I think De'Aaron represented last year, right?
Yeah. I think it's Sign Lady or somebody. Let's mix it up.
We've mixed it up in the past.
Yeah. Funny.
Me and Jason, because we have so much to do, we were going down YouTube and watching old draft lotteries. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some names in there that was just like, who? Like a guy, a minority partner in the Jim Thomas ownership group one year.
Fred
like,
Smith.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get Jerry Reynolds back out there.
Yeah, just so he could have the disappointed Jerry face again. Poor Jerry.
This next guy covered the team for a long time. He could go out there. Pretty good luck all the way around. You always remember, it's one of the things as a parent I've always kept in my head. There are certain things I experienced as a child with my parents. When I would get in trouble, I would do something wrong that I remember to this day from when I was 12, 13, 14. Now, certainly not a similar thing, but I will never forget the day Scott Howard Cooper pulled me aside outside the King's locker room. That was, my first year of doing anything with it. I was literally a kid, wet behind the ears, and shockingly arguing with people on King's internet sites. Who would have thought that?
You? Never.
And I won't,
still
I,
do
I,
it.
And I've never said what was said, and I never will because that's between us. But I will say that Scott was right. And I was wrong.
About you on Internet King sites?
Scott pulled me aside and I won't say read me the riot act because that's not who Scott is. But he let me know very directly that I was being stupid and that I needed to figure out if I was going to be a fanboy or if I was going to be a member of the media. Now,
you chose fanboy.
I chose fanboy. But I've never forgotten the lesson I was taught. He's a good dude. Back in the day when media looked out for each other and you listened to those who were far more successful and far more moral than you. And now he has a new book out. You can get it on Amazon. You can Kindle it. You can go to Google Books. There's so many different ways you can get it. And I will tell you, I was taking a break. I told you, I was taking a break at Disneyland, and I got away from the family for a while. My wife says, "Where the hell are you?" Because I was sitting outside of McDonald's with a sweet tea, enthralled, reading this book that we were nice enough to get a copy of in advance. Steve Kerr, Life, available right now, and we're here to talk about it with the one, the only Scott Howard Cooper. Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Well, my goodness. You know what? I read your tweet yesterday about taking a break at the park, and I thought you were at a neighborhood park or something like that. I didn't know that it was the park.
I was at Disneyland, or more technically, I was across the street getting something at that McDonald's. And I said, you know, we're having Scoop on tomorrow. Let me and generally, listen, 99.9% of the time when a show host gets an advanced copy of a book to have a guest on, you either don't read it, you read the cliff notes, or you scan through. Now, I thought I'd have it read, but kids come up and I didn't have time, but I'm about halfway through. And Scott, I said this without you on the air. It's such an easy read. You have, and people know this, you have a talent for just getting the reader right away. And it doesn't hurt, Scott, that Steve Kerr, to me and to many others, is such a fascinating character. And I'll start with this. It's Steve Kerr, a life, but just as easily could be framed by a death. And you start right out in Beirut. You start right out with the background with his family, how his parents got together. And you go right through what I think a lot of people would agree, and who wouldn't, shaped so much of Steve's life to this date. Well done. And I imagine, Scott, as much as it was hard work, what a labor of love for you.
Well, first of all, thank you for the kind words. And I think you nailed it. It was a lot of work, but a lot of fun. I truly enjoyed spending a year and a half kind of living with Steve, for lack of a better description. I pitched it to the publisher. As you go through the process, you're doing the emails and seeing who's interested and who wants to further the conversation. And then as it moves forward, you have a phone conversation to sort of flesh things out a little bit more. And what I told the publisher in our phone conversation was, I think that this is the story of a unique career, but a fascinating life. I think, obviously, what happened to Steve on the court, around basketball, as a player, a GM, a broadcaster, now as a coach, is interesting. But this is a story. The things that take place off the court, you find yourself at many times. I know as I was writing it, I kind of had to stop and say, really? We're really bringing Kim Jong-un into this so intimately? Someone blew up the family car in his driveway at home. He had a family close, difficult reaction to 9/11. Yasser Arafat is in the book as a connection, Kim Jong-un. And then obviously, that's before you even get to everything that has to do with Phil Jackson, Michael Jordan, Steph Curry, David Robinson, Greg Popovich, and so on. There's so many different layers to this book. I really enjoyed writing it. I hope that energy comes through.
Scott, you mentioned, you know, being with Steve basically for a year and a half, and you talk about all these things that have happened in his life. Did you find Steve to be very candid about them, or was it hard to get him to open up about some of these wounds?
Well, when I say I was with him a year and a half, that meant that he was in my head. The actual time I spent with him could be broken down more into minutes. He was very polite in his response when I asked for some time, but also very firm. No, he wanted nothing to do with this. I go through this whole process and the acknowledgments as far as how the project came together and then move forward. Steve's personality is he doesn't like the publicity. He doesn't want anything to do with shining a spotlight on himself. But then that was compounded by him believing the Greg Popovich theory that as soon as the players see you making it about yourself, you're going to risk losing the locker room. Now, I think that's easy to disagree with. He's Steve Kerr. He's won championship. He if he doesn't have the locker room by this point, he never had them.
Right.
And he obviously had the locker room, but that was his position. He was very polite and professional when I would ask questions in group settings, but did not want to at any point sit down for a half hour or an hour or 2 hours over the course of that year and a half. It's just not something he wanted anything to do with. The good part is I was pretty fluent. I spoke pretty fluent Kerr by that point. I'd been around. I had done dozens and dozens of hours of interviews with him. I'd been around his lawyers for hundreds of days. I was disappointed that I could not go to him to get some details, but it was not a huge hurdle to overcome.
Scott Ira Cooper in saying that. Think about that. Not a huge hurdle to overcome doing what I think is the defining book, at least thus far, on Steve Kerr, which is not, as Scoop just outlined, is very much, I should say, a layered situation. And Scoop, it's interesting. I get Steve's reasonings, and it speaks to the man that he is. He has every right to feel that way, and God bless him. If Steve Kerr was a fan club, I'd be a member. It is, I don't want to say unfortunate, but what's great about your book and the downside of Steve feeling that way through his own humility is it's a story everybody should read. Listen, I we're slobbering all over Steve Kerr, at least I am, for a reason, because you're so many people need to read this. They need to understand the hell that Steve Kerr has been through. You know, we talked a lot this year because it's in the news and because the Suns are relevant about the absolute tragedies that Monty Williams went through. And I think in this day and age, Scoop, to see these huge figures in sports and to see their attitudes about losing a basketball game or missing that shot, and their attitudes are so reflected in off court, and you bring that through in the book, like, yeah, this sucks, but let me talk to you about real pain. People need that perspective, and you bring that through quite a bit.
Yeah, and Steve is somebody that's always had that. There's always been that. He's always looked at things through the proper prism. He understands that basketball is a love of his. It's a great passion, but it is the farthest thing from the most important thing in his life. He celebrates the wins and aches with the losses, but he understands the larger picture. And that's something that he has tried to pass on to other people as well. Even in the moment, as he would sort of stop the Warriors as they're winning championships and say, just appreciate this now. Don't wait till you're 50 and looking back and say, man, those championships were great. Take a moment, look around, enjoy what you're doing now. And at the same time, when things were going bad, if somebody was having a bad day, and he learned this a lot from his mentors, especially Greg Popovich, who was famous for doing this. If somebody was having a bad day, and he would say, do you have food on your table? Do you have a roof over your head? Different things like that. Do you live in a foreign country where famine is an everyday moment? Steve is appreciative of what he has and the life he has lived. That's one of the best things about him.
Scott Howard Cooper joining us this morning. Scott, you know, when you do a deep dive into somebody's life like this and you really get into the intimate settings, the intimate knowledge of them, was there anything or is there any excerpt in the book that just kind of took you by surprise, as whether it was during your research, putting the pen to the paper, so to speak, that you were just like, wow?
Not one single incident. I think that there was the big picture, the story arc, that none of this was supposed to happen. That if you look back and you say everything this guy has accomplished and the amount of serendipity, the amount of fate and luck that had to make it all happen, it's amazing. His parents were never supposed to meet. They were supposed to be in different countries at that time. He had no business going to Arizona, even though Arizona was really bad at the time. Steve is the first to say he had no business going to a Pac-10 school. Certainly going into the NBA, he thought, God, if I could get 2 years out of this, put some money in the bank, get into coaching, and that at least would help me get going on a family life and building a nice house. He knew he had no chance at 15 years and 5 championships as a player. And then even as you look at where he is now, he should not have been the Warriors coach. He told Phil Jackson, I'm coming to the Knicks, and only went back to the Warriors after he had accepted the Knicks job. It just, that's part of the incredible Steve Kerr storyline, is that this was not supposed to happen.
Scott Howard Cooper, it would be incredibly simplistic to say, why did you pick Steve Kerr? He's a phenomenal subject. What I want to ask you, and this is one of those, it's my show, listeners, so I'm going to nerd out for a second. I have that right. I am obsessed with what it takes to write a book. I people don't talk about it enough, but to not just gather info, but to put it in a coherent and accessible format, to build arcs, to do the things that it takes. And by the way, to the stick-to-itiveness for a guy with terrible ADD like I have is a Herculean feat. So for you, give me the genesis of the book. You obviously identified the subject matter, but for you, I am curious as to your process, Scott. How did you build it? How long did it take you to write it? Was it a daily thing? Was it when you felt the moment, did you outline yourself a schedule? I'm throwing a ton of stuff at you, but just let us in, if you would, on your writing process.
I will give as short of answer as possible, and if there's any place you want me to expand, I'll go ahead and do it. But the quick version is that I had not planned to write this book. I was going to do the Warriors and their rise from this team that may have been fun to watch with Run TMC and Nelly Ball and Minute and Mully and all these kind of nutty Don Nelson moments, to a team that was consistently stringing together championships. And it was 2 years ago at this time that I had a proposal pretty close to finish on that topic of the rise of the Warriors, and the thinking and conversations with my agent. It was, all right, they just need to knock off the Raptors in the finals, and then we're going to do a Warriors book. And apparently Kawhi Leonard did not like that book idea. Apparently the fates who hand down injuries did not like that idea, because the Warriors lost the Raptors, of course.
Right.
And so there went that. Nobody wanted to read a book on the rise of the Warriors after they had stopped rising. And it was my agent, Tim Hayes in New York, who suggested Kerr. And at first I was not interested. I just kind of thought, meh, no. And then as I started to dig in, he encouraged me. So just scratch down a few paragraphs here and there. Just get some thoughts down. Think about it. And within probably a month or a month and a half, it went from, I don't think so, to, all right, yeah, this can work, to, I can't believe nobody has done this yet.
Yeah.
Just what we've talked about, that there were so many different storylines. And at that point, it's just, it basically was every day. You might take a day off, but certainly in your mind, you're not taking that day off. You're always thinking on what you can do next. The good thing, even as we talked about before, even though Steve was not directly involved in this project, as I said, I have spent a lot of time around him. I've had a lot of past access to him. He's obviously a guy that's been in the spotlight a great deal. His mom wrote a book. His sister wrote a book. His mother-in-law wrote a book. Two of his former coaches wrote books. And now with the technology of today, I can go back and look at newspaper and magazine stories from the 80s and the 90s. So it's just a lot of research. I talked to more than 120, 125 people, new interviews for this book. And they were all fantastic. People just loved giving their time, because this was one of their favorite topics as well. Everybody likes Steve Kerr. Not everybody agrees with him politically, obviously, but he's a very likable person, and people wanted to talk about him and tell their favorite Steve Kerr stories. And it's just a matter of, you put your head down and you go. And that isn't a great deal of insight in the writing process, if there's anything more specifically, but that's how it came to be. And that was how I got to the finish line. Just a lot of reading, a lot of talking, and more than a little bit of typing.
Well, as we wrap up with Scott Howard Cooper, how about this? 336 pages, according to Amazon. Ballpark it for me. What was that pared down from? I'm always interested in that.
I know the word count, the page count, I think we probably were at 360, 350, somewhere around there. We went, I ended up at about 115,000 words. What we submitted, and I think what ended up appearing, not counting the end notes or anything like that, but just in content, I think we ended up at 102,000. So we probably chopped out, 15 or 20, 25 pages. That's off the top of my head. So I got most of it in, and I had a terrific editor in New York who really emphasized keep the story, and keep it moving. And if there was a point that he thought I got off track and maybe got a little jumped down the rabbit hole too far talking about some auxiliary subject that did not impact Steve that much, we had a discussion about that. So all credit to Nick Amphlett as a great editor if this turned out well.
That's Scott Howard Cooper. You know him well. You can follow him at S. Howard Cooper on Twitter. Steve Kerr, A Life, is out now from William Morrow Books. You can check it out on Amazon, Kindle, Google, all the places that you get books. It is a quick read. It is an enthralling read, and it is an informative read. I'll bet you won't be able to say it publicly, but I'll bet you Steve's going to read the book someday, and you know, and he's going to send you a private note between the two of you, and he's going to give you an attaboy and then some, and I'm sure that'll mean a lot. I'll bet you he reads it, though, someday.
Other people have said that. I'm still a doubter. I don't think so, but enough people have said the same thing that I do kind of wonder. So sure. We'll see how it goes. If you enjoyed it, yes, and the readers like it, and I will say that there's a fair amount of Sacramento connections in there as you get into his NBA life. It's not just all other teams, so people might enjoy that aspect. And I had a blast doing it. Like I said, I hope that comes through in the pages, and I appreciate your feedback so much.
It certainly does come through, Scott, and congratulations on getting that done. Always great to talk to you. We don't talk to you enough, and we need to talk more about these playoffs in the future. Thanks so much, and we'll keep plugging that book, and you don't be a stranger, my man.
You're terrific. Have a great day.
All right, you too. It's Scott Howard Cooper, and we will take a break.
Yeah! That was nice! Coming up next.
For real, though, that's no smoke. I'll be done with this book by the end of the day or tomorrow. It's a phenomenal story. When we get back, bottom of the hour, we got a lot to catch up on, including Once in a Blue Moon, and we'll go back over some of these playoff situations, scenarios, maybe a little U.S. Open as well, right after this.
The number 12 mid-market sports morning show in the country. It's the Carmichael Dave Show on Sports 1140 KHCK.
Coming up.
Or out.
Jay says in my ear during the break. Possible programming note during this segment. I may need to leave. Now, when I hear that, I go, oh, my God, kid, something, what's going on? For a split second. He might be having a baby, but not the type we're thinking. These are great. Jay may need to use the bathroom during this break. And, of course, any other show professionally would just push past this, no pun intended, and just go with the flow. Again, no pun intended. Not us.
Well, let's be honest, okay? Let's just pull the curtain back. Most other shows would have somebody else that could run the board for 2 minutes.
That is true. So we will be... We'll be continuing updates when necessary. So
leaderboard updates.
We have a nice break coming up, and but nature calls. We will see. What I should have gotten Jay for Father's Day is I should get you. I'm sure they exist. A chairlet where you can sit in your chair and do your do the show, but if necessary, lift the chair cushion. And just do whatever you got to do, bathroom related.
Yeah.
And then just dispose of it after the show.
You know, radio, to your point, is ideal for that, except we broadcast on YouTube.
You can take your.
Right now?
Yeah. I'm saying you can undo your picture on the YouTube, and I would appreciate also if you turn the lights down, because I don't need to see that.
It doesn't matter if you can see it. You know it's happening right in front of your face. Like, there's no way you wouldn't be distracted. You would start calling play-by-play.
You know, I would, actually. Well, there's the vein on Jay's forehead.
Woo!
You know, I had to, on Saturday, I had to go at about 11 a.m. at Disneyland. And I convinced myself, you know, sometimes you can't help it, but I convinced myself I wasn't going to do that to Mickey. And I had also, let me tell you something, the Disneyland bathrooms are, I used the Disneyland bathroom a few times over the course of the 2 days. And if I didn't know any better, I would have thought somebody was beatboxing there.
By somebody, you mean you or somebody next to you?
No. I'd be at the urinal, and I'm just sitting there going, what are you doing? Wow. Now, I know the food isn't the healthiest at Disneyland, and you're also walking around a lot.
Nor the highest quality.
Right. And that combined with a lot of walking will loosen some things up.
Sure.
But my goodness gracious.
Okay, if we're going to tell fun bathroom stories, we're at dinner last night. I had my son need to go to the bathroom. I take him in, right?
Uh-huh.
We're washing his hands.
Yeah.
Guy walks in. Isaiah has no filter, as most five-year-olds don't.
Right.
Daddy, is he going to go poop right now?
Yeah.
And points to the guy, and the guy just looks at him and smiles. He goes, son, I'm about to do a big poop right now. And Isaiah gets so excited, like, Daddy, he's going to poop.
Yeah.
Like, yep.
We called it big potty in my household. You have to go little or big potty. And, well, I saved it through Disneyland, and then I got back. And the Airbnb we were staying in had a bathroom in the main, the master bedroom, but no fan. And
ooh,
very thin ooh, walls.
Ooh.
And my wife was lying down.
How'd she make it out alive with
well,
you?
Well, it wasn't so much that. It was the sounds I was worried about. So, and she'll verify this. I started playing the Rocky theme off my phone.
God.
At full blast. Just to kind of cover up any wartime.
Sure, I get it.
Activities.
I understand.
Anyways, God bless Disneyland.
Should have played the theme from Platoon.
By the way, this is when we get notes about, like, when people say on the King's message boards that we talk about dumb stuff.
We?
This is, you brought it up.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
I brought it up off air. You brought it on air.
Than that.
And I would actually have to waste my life and go to a King's message board to find that out.
If you want something talked about on the air, the best time to tell me is right before we go on the air. That's just how I work. You know that. You know there was no way I was.
I'm trying to help you be more disciplined, and clearly I'm failing. Do you want to get to What's in a Blue Moon?
Now my question is, we good?
We're good. I'm going to make it through.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
All right. Once
I may even make it through the next segment.
Okay. Oh, don't risk it. Once in a Blue Moon starts.
Once in a Blue Moon, brought to you by Blue Moon Beer. Here's Jay Mars.
More like 29 times in a Blue Moon. You know why?
Why?
Because Doc Rivers has 29 losses. With a chance to clinch a playoff series, the most losses by a head coach in NBA history. His 341 win percentage is the worst all-time among coaches with 20-plus games.
I mean, he's an NBA champion.
He is. No denying that.
All right. Mount. Let's do a quick Mount stock getting trashed more.
Okay, before we do that, I asked you a question prior to the show. I wanted to see if you marinated on it, and let me get your answer. You have one head coach you can pick today. Is it Tyronn Lue or Doc Rivers?
I want to ask for an addendum to the questions I always do.
Okay.
When you say this, are you saying specifically for the Sacramento Kings and their current roster?
I'm just saying, David, all... You are a GM of Team X,
I'll give you
have two choices.
I'll give you the answer the best I can.
Okay.
If I have a team that is a finals contender that has bona fide stars on it, I'm going to take Ty Lue.
Okay.
If I'm a team like the Kings and I'm looking for a coach that can help this roster, I'm taking Doc Rivers.
So you look at more of Doc Rivers as the guy that if you need a culture change, for lack of a better word, you think he's more of that dude?
I think Ty Lue is more of a player's coach. He played not long ago at all. In fact, he's played with many people still in this league. I think he's more of your modern player's coach who can handle superstars and knows how to handle them because he played with Kobe, he played with Shaq, he played with LeBron James. Doc's a guy I think that can help a young team get to the next level through culture change and through being a hard ass, and he can back it up because he's Doc Rivers. Superstars may not go for that, as you're obviously seeing. I would say Doc's stock has taken quite the hit this summer. And it started last summer.
It's been sinking for a while.
It started
actually.
With the Clippers. It truly did. obviously, Ben Simmons probably leads the way. Nobody's stock has dropped more than Ben Simmons.
Correct.
Followed by Rudy Gobert. He's really taken a lot of hits.
Yeah, but I feel like Simmons is like number one with a bullet.
I agree. Then let's look at a fourth. Now, I'm going to throw a name out
there. So your three in this order, are they Simmons, Gobert, Rivers?
I would say it's actually Simmons, Rivers, okay. Gobert. I'm going to throw, we're talking about players and or coaches whose stock has faded in these playoffs. I'm going to throw a wild card out there, and I'm just going to throw it on the floor and see if the cat licks it up. Lloyd Pierce.
That's pretty good. I didn't have that on there, but that's actually, and I know what your rationale is going to be, and I also think your rationale is correct.
And it may be very unfair to Lloyd. Let's be clear. If you don't get along or you're not clear with your star player, it's not going to work. And that doesn't mean you're a bad coach. Mm-hmm. You might be a bad coach.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean you're a bad coach. It means you're not going to fit in that situation. I'm not here to say Lloyd's not a good coach. I'm not here to say Lloyd may not get another job and prove the doubters wrong. What I am here to say is that it wasn't working in Atlanta. They were a bad team when he left, record-wise. And they're now 8 wins away from an NBA championship.
As much as Lloyd Pierce's stock has fallen because of that, I think it's safe to say if we were to do top 4 stock risers, you got to put Nate McMillan in there.
So
right?
Nate McMillan's in there.
Kevin, like they should be walking him down totally in contract agree. Right now.
Kevin Durant.
Yes.
Stock really just proved again, hey, remember me. Push all the Twitter crap aside. Push my, you know, whatever my snarkiness is, and is that a real question type of responses. Mm-hmm. I may very well be the best player on the planet, and don't forget about me. And when I say Kevin Durant may be the best player on the planet, I mean it.
Yeah.
I mean it beyond Giannis, beyond Jokic.
Dude was unreal.
He's unreal.
He did not go out of the game.
If I asked you to restart the playoffs, and I said to you, I'll give you a choice. You can start. I mean, you don't need to make my point. If you disagree, please, as mm-hmm. always, disagree. If I said, I'm going to give you a choice to restart the playoffs, and I'm going to give you a choice between starting a team with, in these playoffs, between Kevin Durant and the reigning MVP, Nikola Jokic, who do you take?
Kevin Durant.
So do I.
Kevin Durant.
And I am a stand for Jokic.
Dude, if James Harden is fully healthy and or you have a healthy Kyrie in there, the Nets are in the conference finals, and dare I say, they would have probably beat the Bucks minimum in 5.
I think the Nets win the championship.
Yeah, I do too.
And this kind of goes to show you that, unless I'm doing this off the top of my head, but unless I'm wrong and I'm missing a team, when LeBron created the Heatles.
Mm-hmm.
They lost that first year.
Correct.
Won the championship the second year.
Mm-hmm.
There was another one in the middle here.
What are you getting at?
So the Clippers last year.
Right. You're talking about super teams that have won it in their first year?
I'm having trouble thinking of one.
Celtics. Oh, wait.
That was their first year? Okay. Yeah. And then you had, I mean, I don't count the Durant Warriors. I don't count that because...
Yeah, if you're not counting the Durant Warriors, then they'd already won the title.
Because the Heat didn't do
it. It's just the Celtics are by themselves.
And now we're looking at the Clippers, who didn't do it last year, but are very much... In fact, I believe they're the odds-on favorite to win it now this year. They were going into the Suns game one. They may not be now, but they were...
That series doesn't start till game 3. You're correct.
And I would say a similar thing if I'm a Nets fan, which I am not. I would look at it the same way. Kyrie Irving and James Harden were hurt. I don't care if James Harden was on the floor playing 80 minutes.
He had a leg.
I'm all in on the Nets winning the whole thing next year. And I'd make that bet now.
If they run back that team with those guys, which I think they will, arguably, they're going to do it. And if they're healthy, that team is just nasty. Kevin Durant is the clear leader with James Harden and Kyrie Irving, which is the best situation for those other two guys, mm-hmm. is to play with a clear-cut leader, and Kevin Durant's that guy.
Speaking of running it back, never mind. I was going to play the sound or go to break. Damn it.
Yeah! That was nice.
Coming up next.
I just want an update on how you're doing.
I'm good.
Okay,
good. I'm all right.
When we come back, we will wrap up the program. Wow, what a quick 3 hours, huh? Today?
Told you it would be.
What's on tap? Do we have a crossover? Maybe.
Know.
Who knows? We'll find
out. They weren't on air Friday, so I wouldn't be shocked.
Okay, we'll ask a crossover. We'll do all that right after this.
Yeah, let's go. Come on.
It's What's on Tap. Here's what you need to know, what you need to watch, what you need to follow today. It's What's on Tap. Brought to you by
Meredith Baxter and Michael Gross celebrating a 74th birthday today.
Wait, both?
They were born on the exact same day on the same year. They both turned 74 today, and if you don't know who they are, the parents who gave birth to the great Michael P. Keaton on Family Ties.
Yeah, Alex P. Keaton.
Same thing.
Michael J. Fox.
No, Michael P. Keaton is Michael Keaton and Michael J. Fox's child, who they birthed.
The former Meredith Baxter Bernie, now just Meredith Baxter and Michael Gross. And you know what? And they're both still with us, and that's fantastic. 74 years old. Who didn't see Michael Gross for a while as America's dad, kind of the underrated version?
Right.
The
reformed hippie dad.
Let's see. There was Mallory, Alex. Who was the kid? Tina Yothers. But who? Jennifer?
I think it is Jennifer. I think it's Mallory, Alex, and Jennifer.
I think so, too. Family Ties. Great. Always a fun brain situation with people I like to do, especially children of the 80s. Everybody remembers the Family Ties theme song going, sha-la-la-la. How did it start?
I don't recall.
It gets everybody. It gets everybody. It really, truly does. Everybody play along at home. Turn down the radio when we're off the air and try to sing it along. Some can get it. Most cannot. But they all remember the damn sha-la-la-la part.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, happy 74.
Everyone only remembers the hook of most songs, so that's how that works. Just such an interesting dynamic on that show, the hippie liberal parents and super strong-willed right wing, which, of course, in the 80s is a big deal Alex B. Keaton. Inspired a lot of Republicanism in the 80s.
Alex B. Keaton was like, that was my guy. Little young Republican Dave, you know. A's Rangers right here on the Sporty 1140, 505 first pitch. Frankie Montas does not use ketchup as a dipping sauce for nuggets. Against the 4-0, 209 ERA to Kyle Gibson.
Is that good?
That's pretty darn good. That is, and when you think about it, Kyle Gibson has a 4-0 record with a 209 ERA. For a team that is 25-46, Giants off today, which is good for the rest
well
of the
deserved.
Baseball. Well deserved. Yeah, they apparently don't lose anymore.
They made lots of runs yesterday, 11 of them.
And you're about 2 and 5 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Clippers and Suns, game two from Phoenix. Let's hope. One can only hope there's no more fighting on the concourse.
Ever.
I love the hypocrisy of the NBA. Yeah, we'll protect our players. We'll make it a big thing. We'll have think pieces and what is the world coming to? And oh my God, popcorn on Russ Westbrook, which by the way, all valid. And I'm not underplaying that. And they should have made it a big deal. But the fans fighting, that's the peasants. Let the peasants fight. It's cool. Young family already paying overpriced just let it go. It's fine.
We saw this on Titanic. It's the same thing. Get all the rich people on the boats. All y'all that are underneath.
Yep.
Good luck.
They're protected. They're fine. Just let it go. Hey, give the guy a jersey and some game tickets. Why don't you? Give him an action figure even. Put him on all the radio shows. Celebrate it. Clippers Suns at 6 p.m.
Action figure. I hadn't thought about that. That's good marketing.
Someone mocked one up. How about this article off the CBS Sports website? Sam Hinkie left the 76ers with so much capital that even two separately horrendous general managers couldn't keep this team out of contention. If Brian Colangelo drafts Jason Tatum instead of Markelle Fultz,
they win a championship.
And by the way, they traded up to do so.
And a pick, a first-round pick.
Though we're not having this conversation. If Mikal Bridges isn't traded, forgot about that.
That one is, to me, especially a team that is set with defense. Like, dude, Mikal Bridges has been great this year in Phoenix.
If he isn't traded, we're not having this conversation. Philadelphia desperately needs a shot creator, and it had Jimmy Butler in the building.
Jimmy Butler's good, by the way.
Felton Brand doesn't let him slip away. We're not having this conversation. The margin of error Sam Hinkie left the 76ers has evaporated. And I think with everything going on with the Sixers, I think it's important to remember. This ain't on Sam Hinkie. He left him with Embiid. He left him with Ben Simmons, or the number one pick that would turn into Ben Simmons the year Hinkie left. And a cupboard full. A cupboard full of picks. And I'm not going to do the Markelle Fultz thing because, listen, Markelle Fultz was the universal number one pick of that draft. Almost universal. It's never universal. Markelle Fultz was the clear-cut, out of Washington, number one pick in that draft.
Yeah,
this wasn't some shot in the dark.
Now, it's hindsight to look at it from
it
that
It is
way.
Very much. That's not fair.
The Jimmy Butler thing, however, I want to know how much of that was Philly didn't want to bring back Jimmy versus Jimmy wanted to be in Miami. What was the percentage there?
I mean, sure. And then do we remember what the Mikal Bridges trade was?
I know they traded Bridges to Phoenix. They got the rights to Zaire Smith.
They got the rights 45 minutes after they drafted him to Texas Tech's Zaire Smith. Yeah, that's what they did.
And the big thing about that was it Bridges' mom worked as like an usher for the 76ers for years? And like this was like a coming home thing. And remember how happy they were?
Went to Villanova.
They showed him in the draft room. He's just so excited to be a Sixer then. Oh, by the way, you just got traded to Phoenix.
Was selected by, I mean, that is such a weird, what was the other one that was like that? Was that
Zaire Smith was that guy that, you know, the internet, I always say he was the internet player that year. Twitter, that guy everyone loves, like, oh my God, how did they get him at this pick? That was Zaire Smith that year. Hasn't worked out very well.
And by the way, to be fair, they also got this year's first rounder, the 2021 Miami first rounder. It wasn't just a straight up deal, but
mm-hmm.
Boy, I'll bet there, and not no offense to Zaire Smith or whatever they used on that first rounder, but probably wish they had Mikal Bridges.
Yeah, you think so?
You imagine Mikal Bridges, Matisse Thybulle, Joel Embiid, and
Ben Simmons. That's a lot of defense, man.
My God.
Throwing a Jimmy Butler, who, again, pretty good defender. Some would say great.
We got a crossover?
We got a crossover.
Let's cross over.
What's happening with Jason Ross and Doug Christie?
Hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
Let's find out right now with the crossover. Here's today's crossover.
Hey, guys. Crossover time. Carmichael Dave, I know you just had the opportunity to be at Disneyland for a couple of days. So for you, Dave, and for you, Jay, of all the theme parks out there, all of them that you've ever been to, best ride and worst ride?
Okay, that's a good question. And, hey, I can do it. Best ride is tough because I'm partial to the Demon at Great America. Hmm. I love that ride. But
old school.
But not my favorite ride. And this will be part of the crossover back to them. But I would say my favorite ride at any theme park is probably Pirates of the Caribbean. It's about a 10-minute ride. It's air-conditioned. There's neat little smells that happen. And it's what tells me I'm in Disney mode now. I'm in a different world. I'm in Disney mode. And it takes me back to being a kid. That's what I would say is my favorite ride. Worst ride is Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. I don't even know where the hell Mr. Toad is from or what that has to do with anything. I go on it yesterday with everybody and the kids, or Saturday, and at some point you're being taken around in this little car thing. You get run over by a train and you go to hell. And then the ride ends. This is a little kid ride. You get run over by a train and you go to hell. Yeah, Mr. Toad, eat one. Go ahead.
I would say, again, both of mine are Disneyland related. Best ride for me, and you, again, going back to getting those nostalgic feels, is Space Mountain.
Uh-huh.
I geek out every time I get a ride that ride still. Yeah. You know, screw the 90-minute wait. It's the one ride I'll do that for.
Right.
Is that particular ride. Close second, it's no longer a thing, but the Back to the Future ride at Universal Studios was my favorite growing up. And then worst ride is It's a Small World.
Yeah, God.
It's so bad.
We do it every time.
I mean, it's kind of like you have to, I've avoided it the last couple times.
No, we did it every
But if you have kids, you have to do it.
There's no wait. We just get in little water boats.
Dude, it sucks.
Crossover question for you gentlemen, and thank you for the best ride, worst ride question. I'm going to throw it right back at you. If you could take one ride on any theme park you've ever been to, and you could have it in your backyard, where you could ride it whenever you want for however long you want, what ride would you pick? Jay, what ride would you pick?
Space Mountain.
For Scott Howard Cooper, I'd pick Pirates or Star Tours. For Chris Mannix, I'm Carmichael Dave. We'll see you tomorrow. It's Lottery Day. Jim Rome is next. Bye-bye now.